ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम बैक टू अवर भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन कोर्स। इन द लास्ट 6 डेज वी हैव कंप्लीटेड द फर्स्ट 28 चैप्टर्स ऑफ द थर्ड कैंट ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम एंड टुडे वी विल डिस्कस द लास्ट 5 चैप्टर्स ऑफ द थर्ड कैंटो। एंड यस्टरडे वी बिगैन द टीचिंग्स ऑफ लॉर्ड कपिला टू हिज मदर देवहूति एंड टुडे वी विल डिस्कस द सेकेंड हाफ ऑफ दोज टीचिंग्स एंड कंप्लीट दोज टीचिंग्स एंड कंप्लीट द थर्ड कैंटो ऑल्सो। एंड इन दिस एपिसोड मदर देवहूति आस्क्स 7 क्वेश्चंस टू लॉर्ड कपिला हर सन एंड कपिला सिस्टमैटिकली आंसर्स दिस 7 क्वेश्चंस। द फर्स्ट क्वेश्चन दैट देवहूति आस्क्ड वाज टू डिस्पेल हर इल्यूजन एंड कपिला आंसर्ड दिस क्वेश्चन बाय सजेस्टिंग आध्यात्मिक योगा और द स्पिरिचुअल पाथ ऑफ अटेनिंग गॉड। एंड दिस आध्यात्मिक योगा कंसिस्ट्स ऑफ 3 थिंग्स। 1 अष्टांग, 2 ज्ञान और सांख्य, 3 भक्ति। ऑफ दीज 3 भक्ति इज सुपीरियर। वी डिस्कस दिस यस्टरडे एंड हर सेकेंड क्वेश्चन इज व्हाट काइंड ऑफ भक्ति शुड आई प्रैक्टिस टू इजिली अटेन यू। एंड कपिला गिव्स द आंसर दैट वन कैन अटेन मी वेरी इजिली बाय प्रैक्टिसिंग भाव भक्ति और डिवोशनल सर्विस विथ स्पॉन्टेनियस इमोशंस। बट इफ वन इज नॉट रेडी फॉर दैट वन कैन डू वैधी भक्ति और प्रैक्टिस वेरियस रेगुलेटिव प्रिंसिपल्स ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस टू इन्वोक दट इननेट इमोशन फॉर द लॉर्ड। सो वन कैन अटेन द स्टेज ऑफ भावा बाय प्रैक्टिसिंग वेरियस लिम्स ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस। देन हर थर्ड क्वेश्चन वाज टू डिस्क्राइब द सांख्य और ज्ञान इन ग्रेटर डिटेल। सो कपिलदेव डिस्क्राइब्स द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ प्रकृति पुरुष एंड जीवा इन ग्रेट डिटेल। सो बेसिकली ही एन्यूमरेट्स ऑल द 23 एलिमेंट्स लाइक द 5 ग्रॉस एलिमेंट्स एंड 5 तन्मात्रास देन 5 नॉलेज सेंसेस एंड 5 वर्किंग सेंसेस एंड अहंकार महत्त्व माइंड इंटेलिजेंस ईगो एंड पुरुष एंड जीवा। सो ही डिस्क्राइब्स द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ ऑल दिस एलिमेंट्स सो दैट दैट एनालिसिस एंड एनालिटिकल नॉलेज ऑफ दिस मैटर एंड स्पिरिट इज कॉल्ड सांख्य और ज्ञान। एंड द फोर्थ क्वेश्चन ऑफ मदर देवहूति वॉज टू डिस्क्राइब दिस अष्टांग योग एंड कपिला डिस्क्राइब्स द 8 लिम्स ऑफ अष्टांग योग। दे आर यम नियम आसन प्राणायाम प्रत्याहार एंड धारण ध्यान एंड समाधि। सो ही एलाबोरेटली डिस्क्राइब्स एंड एज ए पार्ट ऑफ दिस कपिल देव वेरी वंडरफुल्ली डिस्क्राइब्स द ब्यूटिफुल फॉर्म ऑफ द लॉर्ड ऑन विच ए योगी शुड मेडिटेट। एंड एन अष्टांग योगी वेन ही मेडिटेट्स ऑन द ब्यूटिफुल फॉर्म ऑफ द लॉर्ड ही कैन इवन बिकम ए भक्ति योगी। सो दैट कंप्लीट्स फर्स्ट 4 क्वेश्चंस ऑफ मदर देवहूति। नाउ शी आस्क 3 मोर क्वेश्चंस इन द बिगिनिंग ऑफ द 29th चैप्टर ऑफ दिस कैंटो। यू कैन सी इन द फर्स्ट श्लोक देर। सो शी रिक्वेस्ट हर 5th क्वेश्चन इज ओ माई डियर कपिलदेव please describe the path of bhakti in great detail. Kapila had already described bhakti as in his answer to the first 2 questions, but now she wanted to understand the whole process of bhakti in great detail with elaborate descriptions. So that is her 5th question. And the 6th question is she wanted to understand the nature and characteristics of time. And the 7th question, she wanted to understand the whole process of repeated birth and death of the conditioned soul. So that is called samsriti or samsara. So she wants to understand these 3 subject matters. And today we will discuss how Kapiladev elaborated on each of them. First he begins with his answer to the 5th question. The 5th question is, Devahuti wanted to elaborately understand the whole process of bhakti. So Devahuti even glorifies Kapila as Yoga Bhaskara. You are like a sun, just like sun gives illumination and enlivens people in this world. Similarly, the Lord in the form of Kapiladev, he illuminates the soul by presenting spiritual knowledge and the knowledge of Bhakti Yoga. And Kapiladeva began to describe various types of bhakti. Now, bhakti is one. So that is the process of devotional service unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. But depending on the mood and attitude of the practitioner, bhakti can be called as having three types. So one, bhakti in mode of ignorance or tamasika bhakti, bhakti in mode of passion or rajasika bhakti, and bhakti in mode of goodness, which is called sattvika bhakti. So there is nothing like sattvika bhakti or rajasika bhakti and tamasika bhakti, because bhakti is beyond modes, but the practitioner of bhakti is in these modes. So depending on the attitude of the performer of bhakti, his bhakti, the performer's bhakti, is said to be sattvik bhakti or rajasik bhakti or tamasik bhakti. For example, if the practitioner or the performer of bhakti is in mode of ignorance, he will perform bhakti of the Lord with intentions of violence, pride, hatred, as you can see in the table, and he has no compassion. So when somebody is performing bhakti with this kind of attitudes, his bhakti is said to be in tamoguna. And the ninth sloka says that if somebody is performing bhakti with desires for a lot of sense enjoyment, name, fame, prestige, opulence, then his bhakti is said to be in mode of passion or rajasika bhakti. And if the bhakta is performing bhakti desiring liberation and he is offering the fruits of his activities to the Lord, then his bhakti is said to be in sattva guna, mode of goodness. However, even sattva guna bhakti is also not the greatest bhakti. So our bhakti, our performance of bhakti should be beyond these three material modes. So that is nirguna bhakti or uttama bhakti or shuddha bhakti or kevala bhakti. So bhakti which is exclusively meant for the pleasure of the Lord is what we need to perform. So we should not be performing bhakti to take revenge on someone or to attain material enjoyment or to attain liberation. We should perform bhakti to please Krishna. So when we perform devotional service without any material motivations or without any interruptions, just with the desire to please the Lord, that is called pure bhakti, as Kapila describes in the next two shlokas, 11th and 12th shlokas. Madguna sruti matrena mayi sarva guhashaye manogati ravichinna yatha gangambhasum budau lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hyudahrutam ahaituki avyatihata ya bhakti hi purushottame madguna sruti matrena mayi sarva guhashaye. Just by hearing the qualities of Krishna, qualities of the Supreme Lord, mad guna, guna is qualities, mad means the Lord is saying this, mad guna shruti matrena, by hearing my qualities, mai sarva guhasaye. So the devotee's mind is completely attracted towards the Lord. Manogati ravichinna. Manogati means one's the way one's mind thinks, the path of one's mind automatically traverses towards Krishna. Manogati ravichinna. Avichinna means without any interruptions, the mind just goes towards Krishna's lotus feet. How? An example is given. The example is yatha gangambhasom budau. Just like the river Ganges flows and meets the ocean, although there are so many obstacles on her path, similarly, although there are so many obstacles in a devotee's path, the devotee just goes towards Krishna to render service to Krishna, despite all obstacles. For example, in the life of Prahlad Maharaj, so many obstacles were placed by his own father, Hiranyakashipu. This demon, Hiranyakashipu, tried to kill little Prahlad in several ways, but bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj did not stop. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya yudahrutam. So this is the characteristic of nirguna bhakti. Means bhakti which is beyond the three modes. Earlier we discussed bhakti within three modes, sattva guna, rajoguna, tamoguna. Now this is bhakti beyond the three modes. So there is no interruption in this bhakti. Ahaituki avyatihata. Ahaituki means without any material motivations, without any selfish agendas or personal desires. Then apratihata or avyatihata means without any interruptions or irregularities or breaks. Constant bhakti. seamless bhakti. So bhakti beyond modes is done in this way. Ya bhakti hi purushottame, and that bhakti has to be performed to Purushottama, Supreme Lord Krishna. So this is pure bhakti beyond modes. And what are the characteristics of this pure bhakti? Kapila describes in the 13th shloka here. Salokya sarishti samipya sarupyekatvamapyuta diyamanam na grihnanti vina matsevanam janaha salokya sarishti samipya sarupya aikatvamapyuta. Salokya means to stay in the same planet as God. Salokya sarishti means to have the same opulences as God. Samipya, sarupya means to have the same form as the Lord. Samipya means to stay as close as possible to the Lord. And aikatva means to be one with the Lord, to merge in his effulgence. These are the five types of liberation. And the fifth type, which is impersonal liberation or merging in the effulgence of the Lord, is not preferred by devotees. There are four types of liberation: having same opulences as the Lord, form as the Lord, same planet, and staying close to the Lord. So, diyamanam na grihananti. Even if the Supreme Lord Krishna personally gives these four kinds of liberation to his devotees, devotees do not accept them. Vinamat sevanam janaha. If there is no opportunity to render service, then they will not accept even these facilities. A devotee does not reject liberation out of his arrogance, but a devotee rejects liberation when the Lord gives that out of humility. How can I accept the same form as the Lord if I don't have any service? How can I accept the same planet as the Lord? How can I live in the same planet as the Lord if I don't have any service? Of course, one who goes to the planet of the Lord will have some service, but the devotees are not interested in having the same form as the Lord or same opulences as the Lord or living in the same planet as the Lord. They are more interested in seva. This external, this other aspects of liberation are not very much exciting to them as much as service is exciting to them. So if they get service even in this material world also, they can stay in this material world and continue to do their seva rather than attaining liberation and not having much seva. So now that kind of bhakti is beyond the modes. So 14th shloka says, sa eva bhakti yogakhya atyantika udahritaha yenati vrajatrigunam madbhavayopapadyate. If one performs devotional service which is beyond the three modes of material existence, madbhavaya upapadyate, one can easily attain the spiritual world in which the Supreme Lord eternally resides. So that is the effect of performing nirguna bhakti. And to attain this stage of devotional service, attain the stage of kevala bhakti or uttama bhakti or shuddha bhakti or nirguna bhakti, one has to follow or practice various elements, various limbs of bhakti. So Kapiladev describes various angas or limbs of bhakti in the next few verses. So if we practice these limbs of bhakti, then we can attain that stage of getting attracted to Krishna. Mad guna shruti matrena mayi sarva guhasaye. Just getting attracted to Krishna so spontaneously. So what are those limbs? Number one, swadharma. You can see that picture. So there is swadharma. Then second is devotional activities without violence. Swadharma means different people have different occupational duties. As brahmana, as a kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, different duties are designated in the scriptures according to one's varna and ashrama. And of course, all these duties are meant to please the Lord. Ataha pumbhir dvijasreshtha varnashrama vibhagashah svanushtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. All the various duties prescribed according to one's varna and ashrama are ultimately meant to please the Supreme Lord Hari. Samsiddhir haritoshanam. Next, second element is devotional activities without performing any violence. Then third limb of bhakti, third and fourth. The 16th shloka says, Madhishnya darshana sparsham puja stutya bhivandinaihi bhuteshu madbhavanaya sattvena sangamena cha madhishnya darshana sparsha. The third element of bhakti is to perform worship of the deities, deity form of the Lord. Madhishnya darshana sparsha, take darshan of the Lord. and sparsha, touch the beautiful deity of the Lord, puja, worship the Lord, stuti, offer prayers to the deity, and abhivandanehi, offer dandavats, offer obeisances to the deity. So this is deity worship. Then fourth element is bhuteshu mad bhavanaya sattvena asangamena cha. We should have a detached and spiritual vision. We have to see people and other living entities as servants of God, as fragmental parts of God, as children of God. That is called spiritual vision. And one should not have a vision of enjoying things. One should have a detached vision. So next, 17th shloka says, Mahatam bahumanena dinanam anukampaya maitriya chayivatma tulyeshu yame naniyame nacha. Mahatam bahumanena, we have to offer respects to great people. So that is called respecting superiors. So next element is dinana manukampaya. When we meet people who are little less qualified than us, little inferior to us in some ways, one should not even think that other people are inferior. But if one happens to be see a person who is younger or less knowledgeable than us, we happen to have little more experience, we should show compassion on them. We should not feel any sense of pride or superiority complex. We should show compassion. And when we meet more qualified people, we should not feel envious or inferiority complex. We should respect them. We should give them honor. Next, mitraya chaiva atmatulyeshu. Atmatulyeshu means when we see people who are equally qualified like us, we should make friendship with them. So, respect towards superior people, compassion towards people who are little less qualified, and friendship with equals. Then finally, yamena niyamena cha. We have to follow different rules and regulations. Next, other elements. 18th sloka says, adhyatmika anusravanan nama sankirtana chame arjavena arya sangena nirahankriyaya tatham. So the 9th aspect of bhakti is adhyatmika anusravanam. We should hear spiritual subject matters. Next, nama sankirtanachame, we should chant the holy names of God. We should chant the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Next, arjavena aryasangena. Arjava means having simplicity. Aryasanga means associating with good people, divine people who have divine qualities. And nirahankriyaya tatha, we should not have any false ego. So these are various elements of bhakti. So by following all these practices or aspects of bhakti, we will come to the stage of developing emotions towards the Lord and come to the stage of pure bhakti or nirguna bhakti. So then our mind will get attracted to the Lord. So all these various practices of devotional service will act like wind that carries the aroma of a flower to the nostrils of a person. So just like in a garden, there may be a flower, and the fragrance of the flower is carried through the air to the nostrils of a person who is passing by. Similarly, all these limbs of devotional service will act like wind that carries our mind to the lotus feet of the Lord. So that beautiful comparison is given. Next. So having described the types of bhakti, three types of bhakti, and that is within modes, three material modes, and also Kapiladeva has described bhakti beyond modes, and Kapiladeva has described various limbs of bhakti by which we can attain nirguna bhakti. Finally, Kapiladeva describes offenses in bhakti. So there could be so many offenses while performing bhakti. One offense is disregard. So if a devotee practices devotional service or practices bhakti yoga, but if he disregards other living entities or develops some hatred towards other living entities or criticizes unnecessarily other jivas, then his bhakti is like pouring oblations into ashes. So when you take ghee and then pour into ashes, that is not considered yajna. We have to pour that ghee in fire. That is yajna. But if the fire is extinguished and then there are only ashes there and you pour, take ghee and put in that ashes, then it is not considered yajna. So similarly, our worship of Krishna, worship of the Supreme Lord, or any favorite deity that you have, Vishnu, Rama, Narasimha, Varaha. So when you worship the Supreme Lord in any of his forms or incarnations, we should also have proper respect towards other jivas, because other living entities are also his children, his servants, his parts and parcels. So we should respect them. So if we respect God, and if we don't have respect for people in general, so if you don't have respect for living entities, not only human beings, even animals also deserve certain kind of respect. So one may have friendship with human beings, or one will kill animals and eat their flesh. So that kind of thing does not please the Lord. Even animals are also children of God. So that way one should practice devotional service, worship the deity form of the Lord, and simultaneously one should develop respect towards other living entities also. So not respecting other living entities, not respecting other Vaishnavas, devotees, having some inimical feelings towards them while worshipping God, it's not very effective way of practicing bhakti. One should respect others also. So that is mentioned here. Then such a devotee who does not respect other devotees while worshipping the Lord will not attain peace. The Lord is not very much satisfied with such a person. The Lord is personally saying this here. So one should understand that the Supreme Lord in the form of super soul is present in every single living being. You can see that picture. So in the 25th to 27th shlokas, Kapiladev says that, recommends that we should have equal vision. Realize the presence of the Supreme Lord in everyone. The Lord is staying in a super soul within everybody's heart. So we should understand that not only human beings, even animals and birds and even insects also the Lord stays. We should not harm any living entity. So we should respect them. Now, respecting other living entities does not mean indiscriminately giving similar amount of respect to every single person. So there are gradations amongst the jivas. There are people who are very well qualified. There are people who are equals. There are people who are younger people. Now you have to respect a person. Now a small child will come. So you are supposed to show some affection. You cannot fold your hands and offer obeisances to that child and respect him in that way. So he needs affection. He needs a pat on the back. So we need to also understand the gradations of different living entities while respecting. So respect for other living entities should be there. But what kind of respect should we have, should we offer? We should understand it according to the gradation of living entities. You can see that big chart. From 28th shloka to 34th shloka, Kapiladev describes the gradation of jivas. So inanimate objects are like very poor. They don't have much consciousness. Then living entities which are immovable, like trees. Then living entities with greater life symptoms, like animals or insects, etc. So like, and there are other living entities who have much more developed consciousness. Trees do not have so much of developed consciousness. If you pluck a flower from a tree, or if you pluck a fruit, or if you pluck a leaf, tree will not cry so much in pain. But animal or a human being will cry in pain, because they have much more developed consciousness comparison to the trees also. So like that, we need to understand the gradation of living entities. You can see there is a big list there. So human beings are superior to animals. That does not mean animals we should disrespect. We should give as much respect as required for animals. Then we should give respect to human beings. And amongst human beings also, there are people who are following Vedic culture, and there are Brahmanas who deserve the maximum respect. And then ultimately, a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord will deserve the maximum respect, Vaishnavas. So like that, we should have a proper discrimination amongst living entities, proper understand the gradation of the jivas, and respect as it behooves, as it is appropriate. And best person is a surrendered devotee. So now a devotee offers respects to different living entities in this way. Now Kapiladev completed the description of bhakti yoga. So he elaborately described the process of bhakti yoga. So he answered the fifth question of Mother Devahuti. Now he will begin his answer to the sixth question of Devahuti. What was the sixth question? The characteristics of time. You can see That slide 37th shloka to 45th shloka describes the characteristics of time. So Kapiladeva is describing. So this time factor is the cause of all transformations of material objects. So there is a time when we are born, and at certain time we have to leave this body. So within these two events of birth and death, our lifetime exists. Means within one body. And the body undergoes several transformations by the influence of time. A small child will grow like a boy, and then a youth, and a little elder man, and then finally very old man. The body will dwindle and body will die. So like that, body undergoes various transformations. So all this is because of time. And the time is the shelter of everyone. Time holds no one dear. Just because somebody is good or nice, it does not mean that time will not pass for him. He will remain young and youthful even at the age of 70. It's not like that. So time does not spare anyone. So because of the fear of time factor, demigods function. And time, because of time only, trees produce flowers and fruits as per seasons. And the seasons change, summer, winter, monsoon will just come. And the time is having a cyclic nature. And the rivers are flowing, the oceans are not overflowing. And the fire is burning, earth doesn't sink, all because of time factor. So sky provides space and the universal body expands, all because of time factor. So like that, according to time factor only, the gunavataras are doing creation, maintenance and destruction, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. So now time dissolves the universe by destroying even the lord of death, Yamaraj. So even demigods are also not spared. Demigods are actually appointed administrators of the universe to run various affairs of the universe, and their posts, and as soon as the time, their time in certain post is completed, other demigods will come and take over. Means other people will occupy their posts. So demigods can be in their posts only within one manvantara. So a manvantara will last for 71 Divya Yuga, 71 to 72, like that. So only for that much duration, a Manu will be in his position. The demigods or Saptarishis, they are in their positions. In the next manvantara, then other Manus and the whole managers, management body will change. So that completes the chapter number 29. We enter the 30th chapter. So Kapila has answered two questions. Number one, different types of bhakti, the path of bhakti in great detail. Number two, the characteristics of time. Then number three, means the last question of Mother Devahuti, is about the samsruti, or the birth and death cycle of a living entity. So in the 30th chapter of this canto, which is entitled Adverse Fruitive Activities, Lord Kapila says, first shloka he says, foolish men do not know the power of time, by which they are carried away by, like winds carried by strong, like clouds carried by strong wind. So there are clouds in the sky. They are carried by wind. The cloud cannot, cloud does not have an independence to stay at one place. So cloud does not say that I like this place, I will stay here only. As the wind blows, cloud will just go from one place to another place. Similarly, as according to the time, the movements of time, a person has to undergo physical transformations, bodily transformations, and he will have to pass through the cycle of day and night, cycle of different seasons, and undergo a lot of experiences of happiness and distress. All this is because of passage of time. So next, one should also understand that one might have accumulated a lot of wealth, but all that wealth could be lost with the passage of time. At the time of death, in the second shloka he says, at the time of death, whatever one has accumulated, one's education, one's degrees, one's awards, one's money, one's cars, bungalows, name, fame, prestige, certificates, employees, servants, name, everything has to be relinquished. After death, nothing will come with a person. And in the fourth shloka, fourth and fifth shlokas, where Kapiladeva says that a living entity, a conditioned soul, is influenced by Maya, and he tends to think that he is very happy in whatever species he may take birth in. either dog or cat or a rat or a swan or a parrot or a human being or a devata, he always thinks that I'm happy. Even people who are living in hell also might tend to think that, oh, I'm comfortable. Although there are so many discomforts, because of Maya, the conditioned souls tend to think that, okay, this is life and I have to continue with this, continue like this, and then I have to try to find some happiness within this situation. So, and one will not think that, okay, is there any life which is devoid of all distresses? Out of frustration, one may tend to commit suicide when there are so many difficulties. But instead of just sticking to whatever difficulties are there within this world, or instead of committing suicide out of frustration, one should think that, is there any scope for an eternal life that does not have birth, death, old age and disease? Is there any scope where we don't have to undergo this threefold material miseries of adhyatmika, adibhautika and adidevika kleshas? So that thought will not enter the mind of a common conditioned soul generally. And those who think in these terms, they take to the spiritual path and especially take to bhakti yoga and try to come out of this material existence. Now, people derive satisfaction. In the sixth shloka, he says, Atmajaya suta gara pasudravida bandhushu nirudhamola hridaya atma nambahumanyate. Atma, one's own self. The jaya, wife. Suta means children. Agara means home. Pashu, animals. Dravida bandhushu, relatives and wealth, etc. Nirudha mola hridaya atmanam bahumanyate. One's mind is totally caught up in all these temporary things, and one will think that I am very happy, I am very satisfied, I am surrounded by all this paraphernalia and then people around. Yes, as a householder, one may have to take care of all these things, but that is not all in all. The human life is not meant just to lead a family life and taking care of the society and family and money, wealth and animals, furniture, vehicles. Not only this, there is something more to human life. So one should also try to take to some spiritual path and perfect one's life. Because one might also, because of attachment to this materialistic household life, one might also perform so many sinful activities to maintain life. In the 7th and 8th shlokas, he says like that. So one, there is too much of attachment to family life, then one may tend to even commit sins to maintain that family. And yes, it is responsibility to maintain family, but not at the cost of cheating others. That's what Kapiladeva says. Then, Griheshu kota dharmeshu dukkha tantreshu tandritaha kurvan dukkha pratikaram sukha vanvanyate grihim. Kurvan dukkha pratikaram. So the happiness of a common conditioned soul is considered to be counteracting material miseries. So there is some difficulty. For example, there is some debt, 1 lakh rupees debt is there. Somehow this person will work hard for 5 months or 6 months and somehow clears the debt. And he considers that it is a great success and this is greatest happiness. So unfortunately, the conditioned soul tends to believe that counteracting misery is happiness. Yeah, counteracting misery means you come from minus to zero. But there is something plus also. What exactly is happiness? That is on a spiritual plane, not on a material plane. So relief from headache is one thing, and having a very healthy life is another thing. So finally, this is over. Finally, this project is over. Finally, I got rid of this problem. I am happy. So oftentimes, the conditioned living entity is bombarded with so many problems, and counteracting those problems is considered as happiness. But beyond these problems and solutions, there is an eternal happiness, permanent happiness in the process of bhakti or devotional service, in the process of connecting with the Supreme. So that point is missed by the conditioned soul. And he will accumulate a lot of money for family maintenance, and he can even do corruption also. And in spite of doing all that, there are so many reverses. This person is blamed by friends and family members, and whatever money he has accumulated may not be very much sufficient to maintain the family, or may not completely satisfy the desires of family members, and he is blamed for all of that. And when this person becomes very old, he could be neglected by his own family members or children whom he has maintained with hard earned money. So old people are oftentimes, or sometimes at least, they are neglected by people who do not have gratitude to their elders. And as he is coughing and he is diseased, people get irritated. And at the time of death, during the final stages, when he is on the deathbed, so many relatives may surround that person. And some people are genuinely crying tears out of separation. And some people are happy that, okay, this person is finally leaving. We are unable to bear this person anymore. So like that, the final stages of death are also very painful. And emotions are very strong. And a common conditioned soul generally tends to meditate on all his unfulfilled desires at the time of death. Oh, I wanted to accomplish this. I wanted to do that and do this. But I could not do it. And with those unfulfilled desires, with those thoughts in the mind, he may leave the body, and he will have to take again another birth to fulfill all those unfulfilled desires. And at that time, if the person is very sinful in leading his life, at that time Yamadutas will come and pick up that soul. As the other people are crying, Yamadutas will come and take that soul, as you see in that picture. And he will be taken to hell. On the way to hell, which is like 99,000 yojanas, he is made to travel 99,000 yojanas just within 2-3 muhurtas. So, now after death, one will be given certain body in which one can experience hellish suffering in that body without dying. So, this gross body is gone. But the person is given another body in which he experiences a lot of suffering, and that body will not die despite expose it to a lot of tortures by the Yamadutas, sinful people. So then on the way to hell also, he receives a lot of punishment. Yamadutas will whip him, and they are very elaborately described, very painful descriptions. And within the hell, there are multiple hellish planets. In the 26th chapter of the 5th canto, 26 types of hellish planets are described. Tamishra, Andhatamishra, Raurava, Kumbhipaka. A person will be boiled in hot oil, the sinful person, or a person is thrown into a pool of blood and pus and urine and stool, or a person is made to just get exposed to all kinds of ferocious animals who might just rip him apart, who might just tear his intestines and then eat his flesh while he's alive. And he does not die, he will have to experience all that pain. So like that, a person who maintains one's family by sinful activities, by a lot of corruption, will have to experience this kind of hellish sufferings in Andhatamishra and other kinds of hellish planets. So Bhagavatam very clearly and graphically describes all this. And the miserable, and after experiencing the hellish suffering, the person is put in another material body which suits his mentality, which suits his previous desires, which is like a result of his own past misdeeds. So that body, new body, could be human body, or it could be animal body, or a mammal body, or tree body, or an aquatic body, or a bird body, anything like that. So in one of the 84 lakh species, he will take one body. And he could take body in lower forms, or he could take a human form. And adhastan naralokasya yavatir yatanadayah. So miserable hellish conditions, after experiencing miserable hellish conditions, one will enter some human body. If he happens to enter a human body. So Kapildev is presenting with different cases. So we completed 30th chapter, we come to 31st chapter. So in this 31st chapter, Kapiladev describes what happens when the person again enters a human body, again takes birth as a human child. So Kapiladev, in the previous chapter, he has described all the sinful life of a conditioned soul, his near-death experience, his death experience, his post-death experience, his hellish suffering, and now he is describing the birth experience. So, karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papadyate striyaha pravishta udaram pumso retaha kanashrayaha. Karmana daiva netrena, under the supervision of daiva or the supernatural powers, a living entity enters the womb of a mother. So within that womb, he receives a body. On the first night, when the man and woman come together, the semen will mix with the blood and takes the size of a bubble on the fifth night. And after 10 days, it takes the size of a badari fruit, a small ball of flesh. And on the, you can see the table. And in the second month, his head, arms, legs and other limbs develop. In the third month, his nails, hair, bones and skin develop. In the fourth month, the seven dhatus will develop. In the fifth month, he will also develop some hunger and thirst. In the sixth month, that body will be covered with skin. In the seventh month, he will also develop consciousness. So like that, this embryo, this soul who enters the body of a human being within a human mother's womb, he will have to experience all these things and he will be nourished by the food eaten by the mother. Sometimes if the mother eats some food which is little spicy or which is pungent, etc., the child within the womb suffers that pain of mother's food, and worms will bite that tender body of this child, and sometimes he would fall unconscious also. And bitter, pungent, hot, salty, dry and sour foods will cause him intolerable pain and he will be unable to move. Just imagine a person is put in a very tight sack where there is no possibility of air or light and he cannot move at all. Upside down, he is just sitting there. That's what is the condition of a person within the womb of a mother. And if he is fortunate enough, he will remember his past 100 births and he will regret for all the sinful activities that he has done. And in the seventh month, the sutivata or the air that just propels the child out will become more prominent. So at that time, the embryo within the womb of a mother will start offering prayers to the Lord. If he is fortunate enough to be a devotee, if he is a devotee soul, then he will offer prayers to the Lord within the womb. He says that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet. I have been sinful. Because of my sinful activities, I got this situation due to Maya. I am entrapped in this mother's womb. And although I am spiritual in nature, I got this material body. And how can a conditioned soul again serve you by attaining your mercy? So please give me knowledge and please help me to come out of this entanglement. When will I just come out of this confinement? And after some time he will think that, no, I stay here only. Because in this situation of deep suffering, I am able to remember you. I am able to offer prayers to you. So this is my fortune to remember you. If I come out again, I may be overwhelmed with Maya. I may not be able to remember you. And or sometimes he will pray that, okay, when I come out, so let me just focus on devotional service only. Let me just do bhakti. Let me take shelter of you, my dear Lord. So let me not get distracted by Maya again. So he will undergo all this contemplation and offer prayers within the womb if he is fortunate soul. Not every jiva may offer like this, offer prayers like this. So because of the sutivata, the child is propelled out of the womb of the mother when the time of delivery comes. And he would come upside down with blood. He's hardly breathing. His body is covered with blood. And he has some past memory and he lost that past memory when he comes out. So when he comes out of the womb of mother, first the child will cry. And nobody can understand the mood and the needs of the child, an infant baby who is newly born. Everybody may see the child and they may get attracted to the child. Oh, he's such a sweet baby, such a cute baby. They may get attracted, they may just do like this, like that. But the child cannot express he does not have the ability to express his needs or moods. And he may get irritated by all the touches of so many people also. And people do not understand his desires. And they think that this might please him better, this might please the child better, and they will try to offer so many things to the child, and not fulfilling his own desires, unable to express his own needs, he will suffer more, he will be put in more miseries, and sometimes he would be bitten by bugs and mosquitoes, and then slowly he grows, and he passes through that stage of infancy and goes into boyhood, and he experiences anger and sorrow. Sometimes he may be subjected to false prestige, anger, enmity, I and mine conception. He will be more implicated if he does not take to the process of a spiritual path. And after that, in this context, Kapildev also describes what could degrade a conditioned soul more. That is bad association. The association of materialistic people. He says, Satyam shaucham daya maunam buddhe shrir hirir yashah kshama shamodamo bhagas cheti yatsangadhyati sankshayam. If a person associates with materialistic people or bad people, that bad association will deprive this person of all good qualities. He will lose satyam, truthfulness, shaucham, cleanliness, daya, compassion, maunam, silence, buddhi, intelligence, shri, wealth, hri, shai, yashaha, fame, kshem, kshama, forgiveness, shama, dama, sense control and mind control, bhagas cheti, all opulences and all wealth is completely lost in bad association. And the most degrading type of bad association is illicit association with the opposite gender. If one makes illicit connections with the opposite gender, then that is the most degrading type of bad association. So, and the allurement of opposite gender is very high in this material world. A man gets attracted to woman and a woman gets attracted to man, and because of the exchange of glances and because of attraction towards each other's bodies, there could be some illicit relationships sometimes, and that is the most degrading to the conditioned soul. And one has to tolerate this urge to associate with the opposite gender. So within a official marriage tie, association with opposite gender is allowed, but one should not have illicit connections. And the urge to have connections with other people is also a lot. So one cannot tolerate the urge to associate with opposite sex unless one is very advanced soul. In this context, our Kapiladev also says, Tat srishta srishta srishteshu konva khandita dhih puman rishim narayanam rite yoshit mayyeva mayaya. Who other than the Rishi Narayana could tolerate the urge to associate with the opposite gender, who is actually a form of Maya? For a man, woman is a representation of Maya. For a woman, man is representation of Maya. And this undue attraction or attachment to the opposite genders will entangle the conditioned soul more and more in this material existence. So one should be beware of this kind of undue attachment. Kapiladev elaborates on that. Then he further describes the effects of bad association. This bad association will keep one in the cycle of birth and death. Kapiladev began his teachings with the effects of good association. Yesterday we discussed Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kathah tat joshanada swapavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. If one associates with good people, are pure devotees of the Lord, who are accustomed to discussing the glories of the Supreme Lord, then one can develop Shraddha, faith in the process of bhakti, and one can pass through all the stages of bhakti and attain love of God and transcend this material existence and go to the spiritual world to be in the loving company and association of the Lord eternally. But if one associates with bad people, then one will degrade one's consciousness more and more, and one will be absorbed in this materialistic life, and one might have to experience hellish suffering after death, and one may again have to take birth in this material world in another womb of another mother, and to continue this perpetual cycle of birth and death. But all this can be avoided by taking shelter of Bhakti Yoga. So he defines birth and death. So birth is basically beginning of a particular type of reaction. Death is ending of that particular reaction. And there are other details. And that completes the 31st chapter. We come to the 32nd chapter. In the 32nd chapter, Kapiladev just describes very briefly different types of people in this world. One category of people are attached workers or sakama karmis. Means they perform dharma, artha, kama. They are averse to bhakti. They are more into worship of different devatas for sense enjoyment. And they may attain the moon planet, higher planet for more enjoyment. And they may come back to this world to take birth in another mother's womb. And there are detached workers. They are called nishkama karmis. So they perform work without any attachment to the results. So these people will travel on the path of sun. Well, the attached workers, they traverse on the path of moon. Detached workers, they traverse on the path of sun. And they can attain Brahman also. They will attain liberation. And there are other people like Hiranyagarbha worshippers. So they go to the upper planets like Satyaloka, and they will merge into Mahavishnu's body at the end of the life of Brahma, and from there they could attain liberation. But even Brahma or even four Kumaras or even great personalities who may attain Satyaloka, they also will not attain liberation if they do not have bhakti. Next, Kapila describes this whole process of Sakama Karma, where people perform so many material activities with attachment to the results of those activities so that they can enjoy all those results. So to conclude, to summarize everything, Kapiladeva says that we have to worship the lotus feet of Krishna with attachment and devotion. In the 22nd shloka he says, Tasmatvam sarva bhavena bhajasva paramishthinam tadgunashrayaya bhaktya bhajaniya padambujam. Tasmat means therefore. Tvam sarva bhavena, therefore, with all your existence, with all your energy and resources, with all your heart, worship the Supreme Lord Krishna always. Bhajasva parameshthinam. Bhajasva means perform devotional service. Tad gunashrayaya bhaktya, take shelter of his divine qualities, and bhajaniya padambujam, and worship the most worshipable lotus feet of the Lord. And he also says, Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha janayatyasu vairagyam jnanam yat brahma darshanam. So if one performs devotional service unto Lord Vasudeva, one can attain knowledge, one can attain detachment, and one can even attain the darshan of the Supreme Lord. So this is basically the essential message in the entire teachings of Lord Kapila is that we have to practice bhakti unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. He spoke Ashtanga Yoga, he spoke Jnana Yoga or Sankhya Yoga, and he spoke about attached workers, detached workers, the samsriti and characteristics of time and many other subjects. But essentially, he is giving us this one message. The conclusive message is, perform devotional service unto the Supreme Lord Krishna to perfect your life, to transcend this material world of repeated birth and death and attain the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. And he also says that all paths should ultimately culminate in bhakti and bring us to the lotus feet of the Lord only. So even if you are following jnana path or ashtanga path or bhakti path, we are ultimately approaching the Supreme Lord Krishna only. Now there is a cup of milk. You can see that slide where a cup of milk is there, 32nd to 36th shloka in that slide. Now there is a cup of milk. You see this milk, you come in contact with this milk through five senses. Now use your eye to come in contact with the milk. So you are just using your eye to see the milk. Your hands are not touching the milk. Your nose is not smelling the milk. Your tongue is not drinking the milk. You are just using your eyes to realize the milk. Then you will see that as a white substance. That's all. And if you use your ears to come in contact with the milk, you hear about the milk. Oh, this milk is good. This milk is powder milk or packet milk or cow milk or whatever milk. So that is, you hear about the milk, that's all. You're not seeing the milk, you're not bringing anything. Other senses in contact with the milk. Then you smell the milk. Then you get the fragrance of the milk. That's all. And you touch the milk. Then you will understand whether it is hot or cold. But if you drink the milk, means you bring your tongue or mouth in contact with the milk, then you will get the best benefit of the milk. So milk, the substance milk is same. But you are approaching the milk with the different senses. You have five senses. You approach the milk with all the five senses. Of all these approaches, approaching the milk with your tongue is the most effective way of taking benefit of the milk. Approaching the milk with other four senses will not give you ultimate benefit. It will only give certain understanding, partial understanding of the milk. But if you drink the milk with your mouth, then you will actually be nourished by that milk. Similarly, whether you follow Ashtanga Yoga path or Jnana Yoga path or Bhakti Yoga path, you are ultimately approaching Krishna only. But the most effective way of approaching Krishna is through Bhakti Yoga. Because by performing, say, Ashtanga Yoga, you are meditating on the super soul. You are meditating on the partial representation of the Lord. Krishna says, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesher Janatishthati. I stay within the hearts. I expand myself as super soul and stay within the hearts of every single living entity. Means the super soul or Paramatma is an expansion of Krishna. It's a partial representation of Krishna. It's like Xerox copy. So Krishna is the original. The super soul is the Xerox. So now when an Ashtanga Yogi is meditating on the Lord within the heart, he is realizing a partial representation of the Supreme Lord Bhagavan. So this is Paramatma and he is Bhagavan, Krishna. Now, when somebody is, say, following Jnana Yoga and doing a lot of philosophical analysis and some speculation, then he may be approaching his ultimate aim is through his intellectual analysis and philosophical analysis and cultivating knowledge, he wants to attain liberation and merge in the effulgence of the Lord. So that is called merging in Brahma Jyoti or Sayujya Mukti. Jnana Yogis generally aspire for merging in the effulgence of the Lord, merging in the Brahma Jyoti. They aspire for liberation or Sayujya Mukti. So that is also approaching Krishna only, but approaching Krishna's effulgence, not Krishna's personality. So now Jnana Yogis may attain Krishna's effulgence and Ashtanga Yogis may realize Jnana Yogis are realizing Brahman, Krishna's effulgence, and Ashtanga Yogis may realize Paramatma, who is a partial representation of Krishna, but Bhakti Yogis render service to Krishna through Sravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, etc. And they realize Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Krishna. They can see Krishna face to face. They can interact with Krishna. They can have a relationship with Krishna in multiple rasas, and they can worship Krishna. And they can have the reciprocation of Krishna directly. So now Bhakti Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and Jnana Yoga, by all these three you are approaching Krishna. But by Jnana Yoga you are approaching Brahman, effulgence of Krishna. And by Ashtanga Yoga you are approaching Paramatma, the partial representation of Krishna. By Bhakti Yoga you are approaching Krishna directly. So which is best? Bhakti Yoga is the best. That's what our Kapiladev says. Just like you are approaching milk with five senses, of all these, approaching milk with your tongue is the best. Similarly, bhakti is the best. He says like that. Next, he completes his teachings. He answers all the questions of Mother Devahuti. And Kapila finally says, these teachings are not meant for envious people, proud people, agnostic people who have multiple views, who have materialistic vision. They are materially attached. They cannot understand these teachings. But who can understand these teachings? Faithful devotees can understand. Non-envious, respectful, friendly living entities can understand. Those are eager to do bhakti, they can understand. So even the spiritual knowledge, divine spiritual knowledge directly given by the Lord in his various incarnations, it cannot be appreciated by every single person. Only those fortunate souls who are inclined to devotional service, who are not so much covered by the material impressions, who are not so much... who have not become So much victimized by Maya, such people can actually understand. And other people will take a lot of time to understand. And devotees take some compassion on these people, innocent or ignorant people, and try to explain this whole science of bhakti in a way that is understandable by common people also. Out of deep compassion, devotees extend themselves to reach out to common people with the teachings of the Lord. So he completes his teachings. So we completed 32nd chapter, and now 33rd chapter is remaining, the last chapter of this canto. So Devahuti, after hearing all these teachings, she offers her heartfelt prayers to Krishna, prayers to Kapiladev, her own son. So she says that, "Oh Lord, you are so great, you are such an exalted personality, and how did you appear in my womb? So I am very simple woman, but you are kind enough to take birth from my womb. It's my great fortune. So you are such a great personality that you have given birth to Brahmaji also." In the second shloka she says that even Brahmaji takes birth from you. The Lord in his form as Garbhodakasaya Vishnu gives birth to Brahma through a lotus that is appearing, sprouting from his navel. So you are such a great personality, but it is very surprising that you have taken birth in my womb. And at the time of universal devastation, you lie down on a vatapatra, means on a banyan leaf, and suck your own toe. So I can understand that you perform such inconceivable deeds, and for you to enter my womb and take birth from my womb is also not very surprising. You can do anything. You can sit on the devastation waters and suck your own toe. So you are the possessor of unlimited and inconceivable powers. You are not an ordinary child. You are that same Vatapatra Shai who slept on the banyan leaf sucking your own toe. The Lord sucks his own toe because he understands that my devotees are so obsessed with my lotus feet. They always pray that they want to render service to my lotus feet. What is so great, what is so sweet about my lotus feet? Let me taste them. So if the Lord takes his own feet and puts in his mouth, it doesn't look very good. But a small child, as a small child, he can do all that. So he took the form of a small child and then he was sucking his own toe to understand what is the ecstasy of his devotees. And even great Brahma also could meditate on your glorious spiritual form. And now that form is present in front of me. And you appear to destroy all sins. And finally she says, "Yanna yannamadheya shravana nukirtanat yat prahvanad yat smaranad apikvachit svado api sadyah savanaya kalpate kutaha punaste bhagavannu darshanat." So Mother Devahuti says that even if a chandala chants your holy names, yan nama dheya shravananu kirtanat, by hearing about Krishna's names, by chanting the holy names of the Lord, then even a chandala or a low-born person or an outcast, in the Vedic society there are outcasts who are beyond varnashram, even such people also can be purified by taking shelter of God's names. And they can become qualified even to perform Vedic sacrifices also if they take shelter of this whole process of bhakti yoga. And bhakti does not discriminate people with castes and creed and genders, etc., nationality, etc. Anybody who has sincere love and affection for the Lord, anybody who has sincere attitude to render service to the Lord, is considered a devotee of the Lord, and he or she becomes dear to Krishna, dear to the Lord. So there is no such external prerequisites. And she also says, "Aho batasvapachoto gariyan je jihvagre vartate namatubhyam teapus tapaste jahuhu shishnurarya brahmanuchur namagrananti yeti." A person who is actually accustomed to chanting the holy names of the Lord must have purified himself with all austerities and scriptural study, or have taken holy baths. He has surpassed all the stages. He is already very pure because he has developed a taste for chanting your holy names. So in this way, Devahuti offers her sincere, heartfelt prayers unto Lord Kapila, her own son, who actually enlightened her with all his teachings. Then Kapila replies that, "My dear mother, you will achieve prema by following the path that I had taught you. So please have faith and be fearless and perfect your life. So Devahuti engages in the process of devotional service as taught by her son, and she lives there while Kapiladev goes to Ganga Sagar to practice his austerities for the rest of his tenure in the incarnation, in that incarnation. And Devahuti follows the process taught by her son, and she attains perfection. She attains perfection at Siddhapada, and he melted her body, and that body of Devahuti became a flowing river, and she attained perfection. She went back to Godhead, and Kapiladev performs austerities in Ganga Sagar, and even today also he performs austerities in Ganga Sagar. One who hears this whole description and teachings of Lord Kapila, you know, with concentrated mind, can also easily attain the Lord. With this Phalashruti, Maitreyamani concludes the teachings of Lord Kapila, and we conclude the whole Bhagavata Pravaha sessions on this third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And from the next session, we will begin the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in our Bhagavata Pravaha series. And in this series, we are just going through, Pravaha means flow. We are just going through the flow of Srimad Bhagavatam, not so much into very detailed technical details, and we may not be discussing so many purports, but this whole sessions are meant to give a quick bird's eye view or a quick glance of the expanse of Srimad Bhagavatam, but the depth is unlimited. So we are just seeing the expanse from first canto to last canto, but the depth is unlimited. We have to really go deep into the study to understand more and more details and to relish more and more nectar. So thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.